Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. It is a Tuesday, July the 28th, 2020, 7:28:20. 15 minutes past the hour, you're tuned into the Now program right here on WWGH Radio, and we have got a jam-packed show for you today, full of information and full of guests that I really like a whole lot. Now, coming up in hour number two this morning from 9:10 until 10 p.m., we're going to be joined by one of our regular guests and just a man who has a tremendous amount of knowledge. You probably remember him best as the doctor on the Today Show for so many years. He was also the doctor on Good Morning America, medical correspondent. He's a best-selling author. Dr. Art Ulean this morning, live from 9:10 until 10 a.m. from somewhere in Arizona to update us on coronavirus, vaccines, everything going on the medical end of this pandemic we are going through. And we do want to thank Jeff Ruth for coming in yesterday, sports director emeritus here in Marion, to kind of describe what will happen with sports during this pandemic. Are we going to have a football season? High school sports kicks off in about a month from now. We don't know. We just don't know at this point. Things are ever changing. And when things are ever changing, you definitely want to have our guest for the first hour this morning. He's a good friend of this program. It's been a while since he's been on. I don't think he's been on at all this year. So we've missed him. We know he's busy, but we're so glad he's back today because we want to talk about what probably is the biggest story, certainly the story that has touched more people than any other directly in anybody's lifetime who is living right now, the last 102 years, this pandemic we call COVID-19. He was the 68th governor of the great state of Ohio. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones, as it always has been, Governor Ted Strickland. Governor, how are you?
Well, Scott, I am fine, and it's good to be with you again.
Yeah, how have things been?
They've been good. I've tried to do what is recommended of all of us over the last few months. I've tried to be cautious and careful and wash my hands and stay home as much as possible and wear a mask when I go out. And thankfully, Francis and I, we're both in a high-risk group because Francis had her 79th birthday on the 25th, and I have my 79th birthday on August the 4th. So we're trying to be careful and follow good medical advice, but it's absolutely tragic what is happening to so many of our fellow citizens across Ohio and across the country. It's really sad.
Governor, I want to go back and start here from the beginning. In mid-March, when this thing at that time, which nobody really knew of citizen-wise, COVID-19 coronavirus came on the scene that week in March, what were you thinking?
Well, I was alarmed because even while I was governor, we had to deal with the H1N1 virus, and it was frightening and scary because we were afraid that basically it could turn into a pandemic. Thankfully, we were able to contain it. But I have felt for many years that a pandemic was likely to happen, but I had no idea that it would be so widespread and so many people would lose their lives. And it's unfortunate, Scott, that we were not prepared for this. And months have passed, and so many have died, and yet we still seem not to have come to grips with the fact that we've got to change our behavior, or we will continue to see many thousands of our neighbors, our friends, fellow countrymen die from this dread disease.
You know, Governor, I did, as I'm sure you did, in December last year, we were hearing about, and they did call it a flu then, we were hearing about this flu that was in China that was killing people. It was not a big story, but we started to hear about it right around Christmas time, and there were some rumblings early on in the year, but it certainly was not front page news. Why weren't we ready for it? We certainly knew that something was going on.
I don't know. It's a mystery. You know, one of my dearest friends is the governor of Washington State, Governor Jay Inslee. Jay and I shared an apartment for over 10 years when we were both in Congress. And so I talked to Jay very often. And as you may remember, Washington State was thought to have been the first place in America where the virus was first detected. And so many people lost their lives in that nursing home in Washington State. But we still, even then in those early days, we did not respond with the kind of urgency that was required. And Scott, I think of what's happened in this country, which is the richest, most scientifically advanced country on earth. When you compare what's happened in the United States with what's happened in the European Union, the European Union and the United States have basically the same number of citizens, roughly so. And the virus occurred in countries in the European Union, as it did here, and deaths went up. But when you see the difference in the way the European Union and the United States took action, it's dramatic, and it's really troubling. Because today, the countries that make up the European Union have seen the infection rate and the death rate dramatically decline, very dramatically so. And yet in this country, our infection rate, even as late as today, continues to go up, and we continue to lose so many lives that were not lost in the European Union. And so the question is, why? Why did the European Union... why were they able to take action to contain the virus and to reduce deaths and infections, and yet in the United States of America, with all that we have at our disposal in terms of science and experience and knowledge and expertise, why is the virus continuing to explode in this country? That's a question that I think we have to come to terms with. And we need to be asking some really difficult questions of ourselves.
In your opinion, what is the answer to that question?
Well, in my judgment, it's because we've had inadequate and faulty and misleading leadership at the top. And we've had a president who has minimized the virus, who has shown an ignorance about it, and has continuously, even as late as last night, suggest to people that they don't need to be wearing masks. I mean, I said to my wife this morning, what's wrong with this man? You know, a couple of days ago, he was saying that wearing masks could be helpful. And then he gets on the tweet and he implies to people that it's not all that important. I mean, it's so inconsistent and so contrary to what the medical experts are telling us. And it's, I mean, I go back to the European Union. If you just look at what they did and how they were able to contain the virus, to prevent deaths, and to begin opening up their countries in a more normal way. And then you look at the advice that's coming out of Washington, and it's really puzzling. What's in this president's head? What's driving him to be so inconsistent from day to day regarding what he encourages people to do? I think, unfortunately, that until we get different leadership, we're going to continue to see the kind of destruction and death that we're seeing across the country. And it's unnecessary, and it's tragic. And so many people are being infected, and so many lives are being lost unnecessarily because we've had ineffective, inconsistent leadership from the president.
Governor, as this would be, as this would happen, 2020 is an election year. A lot of people wouldn't know it because it's not certainly your typical presidential election year. We're now under 100 days until the election in November. I was watching a program last night, and the pundit said very clearly, he was asked, will President Trump be a two-term president? And the pundit said, it all comes down to this pandemic. If he has a handle on it by November and numbers start to go down, he'll be reelected. If it continues to spiral out of control, he'll be a one-term president. So why would he not want to get a handle on this?
I don't know. It's very puzzling. Scott, a president occupies a very special place in the thoughts of American citizens. You like the president or you dislike the president. The presidency itself has always been, I think, an office that was respected and looked up to. And unfortunately, Donald Trump has violated so many norms, so many standards that I think the American people are unable to take confidence that what they're hearing from the President of the United States is the truth and something they can depend on. And my personal feeling is, you know, I was a psychologist long before I became a politician. I worked for decades in mental health, working with people with serious mental illnesses. And I have felt for a long time that the president is psychologically, mentally disordered to the point where he is diagnosable as an individual with a severe narcissistic personality disorder, and some people believe that he has other kinds of tendencies that would be antisocial. I don't know, but what I do know is, as you watch him, as he just lies consistently about nearly everything. When he talks, we don't know if we're hearing the truth or if we're hearing some version of the truth or if we're hearing just an out-and-out blatant lie. And he's the leader of the country. He's the person with the nuclear codes. His words mean something. Every word that comes out of his mouth is significant. Not because he's Donald Trump, but because he's the president of the United States of America. And it is tragic that we're facing this pandemic, and then we're facing all the other problems that confront us with our economy. And we have a leader that we can't trust, we can't depend on, who doesn't inspire confidence in the American people. And I want to tell you, Scott, I just cannot wait until we have a chance to go to the polls in November and change leadership. If we don't, I really fear for the future of our democracy, and I believe that the United States of America may cease to be the country that we've enjoyed in the past. And I know that sounds like, you know, a doom and gloom, alarmist kind of statement, but I do believe it in my heart that it is really important that we have a leadership change come November.
Governor, before I get to the state level here, because I want to talk about the state level, when we talk about the election and we talk about being under 100 days now till the presidential election, and this has been said all along, and people can choose whoever they want to vote for. That's the great thing about America. That's democracy. But there is this 30%. And whether you support a Democrat, a Republican, a Libertarian, a Green Party person, most people will say that they have never seen anything like this 30% that support the president, that he does no wrong, that there is absolutely nothing that he can do wrong, that they would never change their vote on any subject, basis, or crisis, and anything even said negatively about him. You know, I'm sure there are people right now. We live in a very a state that went very much for President Trump in 2016 by a wide margin, and Ohio being a swing state, that was different. I'm sure there are people flipping the dial right now, because anytime you speak badly about him, people get it. What is that 30% about? What psychologically is that? I've never seen that for a political person.
Well, it's puzzling, but you are accurate in describing it. I think it's more than 30%. I think it's closer to 40% of people who want to hear only good things said about the president and reject anything that's negative. But let me say to you, Scott, that I believe the president has consistently worked to sow distrust in the minds of the people of this country. I mean, you know, he criticizes all the institutions of government, the FBI, even the military. He says good things about the military, but then if you watch his actions, the way he talked about John McCain, the way he's talked about other military heroes, the way he talked about the senator from Illinois that lost both of her legs flying a helicopter in Vietnam. I mean, he just denigrates everything about our system of government to the point where people don't know who to believe or what to believe, and they tend to, you know, to listen to him. And that's, you know, that's a problem. I mean, he implies, for example, that he may not accept the outcome of the election if he doesn't win. I mean, what kind of person, what kind of president would take such a position? That's really dangerous to our democracy. The peaceful transfer of power has existed in this country from the beginning. It's the one thing that separates us from so many other countries in this world. We have a system that the people have embraced and respect, and when one party loses an election, the other party takes over in a peaceful transfer of power. And so the president said on Fox News just a few days ago, well, you'd have to wait and see. I mean, that's really dangerous. And I know you've got people out there listening this morning that say, well, this Strickland, he's nothing but one of these airhead liberals. And I want to tell you, I've got Republican friends. I've got people in the Republican Party that I respect. You know, I've got a good relationship with Governor DeWine. I think he's really trying to do a good job in managing this this virus. But the president is of a different kind of person. I mean, and it's true. There are hundreds, millions of Americans that would walk over hot coals for this man, and I find it difficult to understand why. Because he's self-centered. He's selfish. he embraces people who have been convicted of felonies, and yet he criticizes anyone so severely that contradicts him, even people like Dr. Fauci. So I don't know. He's a different kind of president, and the people will decide, Scott, in less than 100 days. The American people will decide.
Interestingly enough, speaking of Republicans who are not fans of President Trump, the man who seceded you as governor of Ohio, Republican John Kasich, we learned last week, we think, will be speaking at the Democratic Convention. Did you ever think you'd live to see that day?
John Kasich is a difficult person for me to understand. I wasn't terribly surprised when I heard that he may be a speaker at the convention, because, as you know, he has been very harsh on the president, I think for good reason. But there are many Republicans that have decided to put their country over party and are supporting not just the election of Donald Trump, but they're really supporting the defeat, the election of Joe Biden, but they're supporting the defeat of President Trump because they consider him a threat to the nation. And these are patriotic people, in my judgment, and they understand that that the country is at risk and we need a change. And so they're saying, I'm a Republican, I'm a proud Republican, I've always been a Republican, but I understand that the country is more important than the Republican Party. It's more important than the Democratic Party. And they're willing to put themselves out there and speak their minds and encourage people to remove this man from office.
Governor, there are a few people, we can count them on one hand at this point, who would have the perspective you have, and we understand you're friends with Governor DeWine, but you know what a governor of Ohio does, has access to, can do. If you were governor during this pandemic, what would you have done?
Well, I think I would have done many of the things that Governor DeWine has done. The only thing that I wish he had done a little sooner than he did was to have a statewide mandate regarding the wearing of masks in the public places. But I think, by and large, he has been well in trying to contain this virus. There are no silver bullets, no easy answers. The governor did shut down our schools. I think he may have been the first governor in America to take that step, which I think was the correct step to take. I think he's held, these briefings regularly, trying to keep the people of our state informed regarding what's being done to fight the virus. So I don't have any real criticisms at this point. I may have done some things differently, but by and large, I think he has acted responsibly. And I don't know what's going to happen going forward. If we don't get this under control, I can tell you, I believe we're going to see maybe 250,000 people die in this country. And in Ohio, we've had a special problem, obviously, as they have in other states, with deaths occurring in our nursing homes and in our prisons. I think the governor has tried to take responsible action in those institutions to try to limit and curb the infections and the deaths. So I don't have any specific criticism at this point.
Governor, here we are. The numbers certainly are on the rise. We now have a mask mandate, which we had not had heretofore. But also, at the same time, Cedar Point is still open. The Columbus Zoo is still open. Restaurants and bars are still open. Is that the right move to make at this point?
Well, what I think we need, Scott, is leadership at the national level, because we are one country, and what happens in another region or in one state is going to happen in another state, because people move around, and it's difficult for a single governor or a single state to make decisions without those decisions being impacted by what's happening in neighboring states and other places across the country. So I think it would be very helpful if we had a national requirement that when people are out of their homes and in public places, that they are required to wear a mask, and if they cannot, socially distance. Now, I go to the park. I try to walk in the park here in Columbus. And when I'm out walking and I'm not near anyone, I don't wear a mask. But when I go to Lowe's or when I go to the supermarket, wherever I go, I'm going to be wearing a mask. And I just don't think that's too much to ask of people, because it will save lives. We know that. The experts tell us that. And the evidence shows us that we can participate in the saving of lives simply by wearing a mask. And it's not the total answer, but it's certainly something that we can do. Now, the president said early on that he felt like a wartime president, and that we were at war with this virus. Well, if we're at war, the least we can do is wear a damn mask. We don't have to call, be afraid of being blown up by a roadside bomb or carry a weapon or, like soldiers do. But at least we can wear a mask. And the president, as the leader of the country, if we are at war with this virus, the least he can do is to show by example and with his words, encourage Americans to do those things that we know can save lives. And so we're not asking, we're not acting like we're at war with this virus. And some people are saying it's a hoax and so on and so forth. And the president has contributed to that thinking. And so I was just contemplating this morning how things could have been different. If we go back to February of this past February, if we had had a president who gave a national address and said to the American people, we're facing this great threat, there are things that we can do to minimize the risk and to reduce the deaths, and if he just had outlined some simple things that would have made a difference, I think we wouldn't have had the number of deaths we've had or the number of deaths we're going to have. It's happening every day. People are continuing to get infected and die in Ohio and across the country. And the president needs to be acting like a wartime president, because we are at war with this virus, as he has said. So, it's so sad. It can make you angry and frustrated. But I think the feeling that many people feel is just a sadness as they see people dying, and it's continuing, and it's almost as if it's out of control. And then I go back, Scott, to what I said to you earlier in this hour. If you look at the European Union and you see what they did and what the result has been and how many lives have been saved, and then you look at what we've done, It's really sad. It's embarrassing for our country that we have handled this so badly. And the president's not the only one at fault, and I understand that. I mean, we've got some governors that even to this day are refusing to recognize. I mean, look at what's happening in Florida. It's just really, really sad. And the governor of Florida continues to minimize the risk and to try to say, oh, we need to open all of our schools and so on. Where is the leadership? It's just not there. And people are dying as a result, and it's quite sad. You know, if Mike DeWine were president instead of governor, we would be facing a different set of circumstances. If my friend Governor Jay Inslee, a Democrat in Washington State, was president instead of just the governor, the country would be at a different place. But unfortunately, we've got Donald Trump, and he puts his own ego and what he perceives to be best for him ahead of what's best for the country, and we are losing people as a result.
Governor, here we are. We are in late July of 2020. We are about a month away from school starting, possibly fall sports. We don't know yet. Where do you think we're going to be? Because we certainly don't think we're going to see a vaccine this year. Where are we going to be in November, Christmas time? Where are we going to be in the fall? What do you foresee?
Well, it's alarming to think about it because, as you know, the seasonal flu will reemerge as we go into the fall and the winter months. And we lose sometimes up to 40,000 people just to the seasonal flu. But if you take the seasonal flu and then you face the coronavirus outbreak on top of that, it's really alarming to think about. I don't believe we're going to have a national sports as we've had in the past this year. I just don't think it's going to happen. Several baseball players have just recently been diagnosed, and so there's a question as to whether or not baseball will be able to even continue. It's been underway for, a few days. I think high school sports is going to be very limited if they occur at all. Our way of life has changed dramatically, and it's likely to be changed for the foreseeable future. But the issue is, if we want to get back to normal, if we want to have sports, if we want to have jobs, if we want to be able to get out and about and spend time with our friends and our family members, if we want those things to happen, then it's important that we get this virus under control. And the only way to get the virus under control, in my judgment, is to, in the short term, do what must be done. Limit our interactions with other people, wear masks, wash hands, and do the things that the experts tell us are necessary. You know, they're getting back to normal in Europe. I keep going back to Europe because it's such a contrast. They had the same set of circumstances, and yet the way they dealt with it was so different. But they are now getting back to normal in Europe. They're opening up. They're having sports, and they're having jobs come back and all that kind of stuff. We went in the opposite direction, and so we're not going to be able to get back to normal in the short term. People want to, obviously people want to, but it's not possible. And so I think for the next few months, we're going to have to really work to get control of this virus, or we won't get back to normal in the latter part of this year or in the earlier part of next year. And that's just the reality. I think I'm speaking the truth. I think Dr. Fauci is speaking the truth when he says these things, and yet some people don't want to hear it, they want to wish away the virus. We can't wish it away. There's no silver bullet to get rid of it. We have to do the things that that we're told by the experts we need to do.
Governor Strickland, that being said, if you were governor of Ohio right now, would you send the kids back to public school?
No, I would not. I would, first of all, try to listen to the local educational leadership, because not every county in Ohio, not every part of Ohio is like every other part. So rather than to say all of the kids, all of the schools need to be open, schools, you know, people need to be opening the schools, the teachers need to be in the classroom and so on, I wouldn't do that. What I would try to do is lay out options which would be available to local educational leaders. And there may be places in Ohio where full-time in-class education would be possible to do in a safe manner. But I think, by and large, we are not at that place. It's a real problem, Scott, because, you know, I came from Appalachia, Ohio, and you know, if you go into some of those counties in Appalachia especially, they don't have access to the internet. They can't have instruction online, either because the internet availability doesn't exist down there, or because the families can't afford the cost of the technology. So it's really problematic, and you know, we've had months now to really try to come up with some plans as to how to deal with that problem. And I think there's been a lot of thought that's going into that, but I think some schools, bottom line is, some areas, some schools can meet in the building, in classrooms, and do it safely. I think many schools, many regions of the state, that is not possible, and that we've got to do online instruction or a hybrid of online and in-class instruction. But just to say that our kids need to be in school and not take into account the problems associated with that and the dangers associated with that, I think is totally irresponsible. Our education secretary, Betsy DeVos, I think is really terrible because she just says, oh, we need all these kids back in the classroom, and if they're not in the classroom, we're going to take that money out of the public school and we'll give it to private schools. You know, that are holding in school classes. I mean, that's just one example of her disdain for public education, and it just gives her and the president an excuse to take resources from our public schools and to direct those resources to private schools, and in some cases, private for-profit schools, and it's shameful.
Governor, we have about 8 minutes left here, and there's so much going on this summer and so much I want to talk to you about here. And just shifting gears from coronavirus here for a second, Columbus, Ohio, you know, a city you know very well, has had protests, has had riots, unfortunately, and a lot of it centered recently on the figure and the person the city was named for, Christopher Columbus. Statues have come down at colleges. Statues have come down in public places. It, being a student of history, being former governor of the state of Ohio, what do you make of the racial unrest of the protests in Columbus, Ohio?
Well, I think when there's violence and destruction, that is never appropriate or should not be tolerated. But the fact is, Scott, most of the protests have been peaceful, and they have been directed toward the perceived racial bias that exists within our police organizations, not only in Columbus and Ohio, but across the nation. And I think what happened to George Floyd tore a scab off a sore that has existed in this country for a long time. And here in Ohio, if we look back really over the last few months, we see that young Tamir Rice in Cleveland, who was a kid playing in a park with a toy gun and was shot within 3 or 4 seconds of the police arriving on the scene. The man that was in the Walmart over in the western part of the state, who was just standing there holding a toy gun that Walmart was selling in that store, and someone called and said, there's a black man walking around with a gun, and the police come in and shoot him dead. I mean, the bottom line, in my judgment, is that those things are happening when a person is black, and they probably would not have happened if the person had been white. And for me, that's an indication of at least unconscious bias. I'm not saying that, you know, that there was an effort on the part of the police to purposefully take the life of an innocent person, but I think it does show that we've got a problem that we need to recognize and work on. Now, in terms of, you know, some of the statues that have come down in this country, I'm all for it. I mean, many of these statues were put up specifically during the Jim Crow era in this country as a way to demonstrate to the black community that these people who fought the Civil War, who fought to keep slavery in place, you know, were heroic figures. They were not heroic figures. They tried to destroy our nation, and they took up arms against our country, and they ought not to be honored in that way. In terms of Columbus, I have no problem with his statue coming down, as the mayor and the city council chose to do, because, you know, I'm not an indigenous person. I don't know what it feels like to a person who's a part of the original indigenous community here to have been treated the way they were treated. But bottom line, Scott, this country was built on slavery for about 400 years. I mean, it wasn't a short period of time. Human beings were bought and sold and raped and killed. And I think it's only appropriate that we recognize that. That doesn't mean that we love America any less, but we recognize that we have a history, and we need to acknowledge that history. And we need not to honor people who were responsible for the tragic institution of slavery. So things are changing in this country. I think it's healthy. I think we are coming to have a more realistic, honest view of American history. And I think that's all for the good. I don't think we need to feel threatened by that. I just think we need to say, you know, we love America, we love our country, but we understand that there is a part of our history that was dark and tragic, and we need to recognize it, and we need to not continue to honor those who were responsible for that history.
Governor Strickland, to swing back to coronavirus here really quick, the pandemic, the economy is a big part of this. They're talking in Washington right now about a second stimulus check. What is the long-term effect in Ohio? We're hearing about what it's done in Ohio right now to the economy.
Well, Scott, you may remember that during my term as governor, we experienced the Great Recession. And I had to make terrible decisions during that period of time, because during a recession, tax revenue goes down and the human need goes up. And so you have to make these gut-wrenching decisions about how you're going to use the resources that you do have. And Governor DeWine is going to be facing those circumstances. He has, but he's going to be facing those circumstances going forward as well. The economy is really in bad shape, and people are suffering, and we need significant help from the federal government. We need, I believe, to continue the resources that the unemployment resources that have been made available over the last few months. The Republicans want to reduce that amount from $600 a month to $200 a month. Why they would do that 100 days before an election, when there are so many Ohioans and Americans who are struggling just to keep their nose above the waterline, to keep from losing their homes, to feed their families, and so on. I don't know. Yeah, but, you know, the Republicans, this is going to sound very partisan, but I feel this way about it. The Republicans have no problem giving away lots of money to people who are a part of the richest among us, the corporations and the CEOs and so on and so forth. They have no problem. But when it comes to giving a little money to average working people, boy, they become penny pinchers, and they start talking about the deficit. And I'm saying, give me a break. When the Republican Party demonstrates that they're willing to expect the 1% to pay their fair share, then I'll listen to them when they talk about their concerns about too much spending and the deficit. We do have deficits in this country. But, you know, when you're in a recession, that's when you need to do deficit spending. You need to tighten your belt when the economy is doing well so you can save some money for the hard times. And this Republican Party has done just the opposite. They have spent like drunken sailors when the economy was good. And now that the economy is in difficulties, you know, they want to pinch pennies when it comes to helping regular working people who are out of work and have lost their jobs and are struggling to survive. And that's totally against my economic philosophy and theory. And I think the American people here again will have a chance in a few days to go to the polls, and they'll decide, do they want a political party in power that looks out for the wealthy and the well-to-do, or do they want someone in the presidency who cares about regular working people?
That being said, with 10 seconds left to go, if the election were held today, who would be the next president?
Joe Biden.
I tell you, 68th governor of the state of Ohio, Ted Strickland. Governor, I hope you come back soon, definitely before the election. It's always my pleasure to speak with you.
And Scott, it's good to speak with you and all of your listeners, even those out there who disagree with what I say. This is America, and everybody has to their opinion.
Absolutely. The right to their opinion, and as long as you speak passionately about it, that's what we all care about. Thank you, Governor.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. 68th Governor of the state of Ohio, Ted Strickland, Dr. Art Uhlein, right after this.
495, webpage, crtmechanicals.com.
GTG, BRB, be there in a few. You may. These kinds of texts are